Welcome to the podcast of the Geological Society. My name's Sarah Day and I'm joined by Professor Al Fraser, who is a Professor of Petroleum Geoscience at Imperial College London and has just delivered our London lecture, Oil and Gas in the Arctic. The Arctic is a place that's fascinated explorers for hundreds of years. What is it that makes it so interesting to the oil industry?
Well, there's very few places on the planet that the oil industry, or any of us for that matter, can still go and find, have the expectation of finding large volumes of oil and gas. So the Arctic, which across the Arctic circles, 5,000 kilometres. Don't think we realise how big an ocean it actually is. And of that area, north of the Arctic Circle, about 50% of that is continental shelf. So the minute you start talking continental shelf, as geologists we start getting a bit interested, right? It's not all ocean, and it's not all deep ocean. The continental shelf's between about 50 and 200 metres deep. It's accessible. Some of the widest continental shelves on the planet, you know, like the small shelves we've got around the Atlantic Ocean. This is major, fairly shallow continental shelf. And when we've got continental shelves, we've got the possibility of having basins. And when we've got basins, we've got the possibility of having the elements that make up oil and gas play systems, reservoirs, source rocks, seals, traps. And therefore, it encourages people to go and look in these areas.
So even just without having explored, just the idea of the, how the geology of the place is made up suggests that there's a lot of resource there.
Well, there's a couple of small areas that have been explored and have been immensely successful. It's about 200 million barrels of oil already found up in the Arctic. This is significant. And in two places, Alaska, North America and Canada, and off Russia.
So 200 million barrels. Is there a way to explain that in a quantity that we...
Well, I should have said 200 billion barrels.
Billion.
I'm getting the billions and the millions mixed up. 200 billion. How, from what's already been found, let's say that is getting on for about a couple of times the North Sea. So about two times the North Sea's already been found. And you know how number of wells there are in the North Sea. Well, in the Arctic, there's not that many wells. In fact, in a stretch from, well, just off the Barents Sea called the South Kara Sea and the peninsula of Novaya Zemlya, right all the way around to Alaska, 5,000 kilometres, not a single well.
So considering that resources are already beginning to dwindle in other areas and we're sort of running out of easily accessible resources, why aren't we there already?
Well, yeah, good question. Because clearly there has been activity in the Arctic, but most of the activity in the past has been in the onshore Arctic. When I worked up in the Arctic in the late 70s, 1979, it was onshore at Prudhoe Bay. We're now talking about going off into the Arctic Sea, the Arctic Ocean. This is an ocean covered by ice, at least half the year and sometimes more. And the ice just doesn't sit there. It moves, and by most accounts, it moves around about 3 meters an hour. That's a lot. You know, you put something on top of the ice one day and you come back the next day, it's 70 meters away. Now, you can't do that if you're putting facilities actually at sea level on the ice. So you've actually got to come up with a solution that takes the ice out of it completely, which means operations at the seabed, under the ice. And to
be
frank,
you have to actually be underneath the ice.
You've got to get underneath the ice. And apart from a rather futuristic nuclear-powered submarine that the Russians have a concept for, I haven't seen anything working, even in the lab, that's going to solve this problem yet.
So there's a long way to go.
There is, yeah. Licenses have been awarded. People will do exploration. People will find out if there's oil and gas there. And just like opening up the North Sea back in the 60s and 70s, the last century, the oil was found first and then the technology was developed to get it out.
And what's the argument for doing this? Because I suppose there must be large numbers of people who are horrified by the very idea of going up to the Arctic.
Yeah, when I talk about this at Imperial College to my students, it's the first thing they ask me, well, why? We don't need to go to the Arctic. We've got plenty of oil and gas around the world. And there's two or three answers to that. The first is, yeah, we have actually got plenty of oil and gas around the world. It's just unevenly distributed. And the people who have the oil and gas are generally in the Middle East, and the people who want it are in Far East, they're in Europe, the States, North America. And it's the underlying security of supply or insecurity of supply because of that distribution, easy to cut off the transport routes, that people want to have alternative sources of supply. Energy use on the planet, it's not saying flat, it's increasing. Over the last 20 years, probably about 45%, depending on, well, according to the BP Energy Outlook from 2011. In the next 20 years, probably about the same, mostly in non-OECD countries. We're still hooked on energy. We love it. And if you look at the split, it's about 30% oil, 30% gas, 30% coal, 10% renewables, nuclear. We're still relying on fossil fuels.
So assuming we're pushing towards reducing that reliance and building up other sources, there's still going to be a need for...
Looks like there's going to be for the foreseeable future. It would be wonderful if tomorrow we could just rely on renewables. But the physics and the science of it is not going to allow us. We just cannot turn the sun on, turn the waves on, turn the waste production of energy, the hydro production of energy. It's just not happening overnight.
And presumably this politically is not the simplest situation in terms of the extraction and the use of these resources.
No, because when you actually look at who owns the Arctic?
It's a question people probably don't ask themselves very often.
Well, if you, it's there's five main countries that are going to be involved in regulating and licensing Arctic oil and gas exploration and production. The major one's going to be Russia. It's probably 2/3 of the oil and gas we find in the Arctic.
With
it's going to be
scary there. Nuclear submarine.
Yeah, they won't get to use that, but they do want to have a major position in supplying energy, not just to Europe, but around the world. There's Norway, already got a fairly well regulated, environmentally friendly oil and gas policy, and they share the Barents Sea with Russia. There's Greenland stroke Denmark. Greenland are in a position where they want independence from Denmark. To get independence, they need money, and to get that money, they need some successful oil exploration, so they're pushing it. And then probably the most stable, Canada and America, the USA, Alaska and the Beaufort and the Mackenzie Delta, the Beaufort Sea, pretty well regulated. Not much happening at the moment offshore, but all with different fiscal regimes, regulatory regimes, government attitudes towards oil and gas and the environment. And until these five get together and sort it out, we're not going to have a consistent framework. And boy, do we need it!
It sounds like a situation that's sort of poised for potentially some quite difficult diplomatic.
Yeah, because you can imagine that people will have stiff environmental regulations in Canada and USA, Alaska and in Norway, and perhaps rather more relaxed ones in Russia.
Yeah. And presumably there's also people involved who actually live in the Arctic.
Yeah, it's interesting to think of the Antarctic versus the Arctic. The Antarctic's a continent surrounded by sea, water, and there's nobody lives there. In the Arctic, it's an ocean surrounded by continents, and there are people live there, 4 million of them, and anywhere between 10 and 15% of them indigenous peoples who live, work, hunt and fish in the Arctic. And they certainly should have a say in any future exploitation of the resources in the region, and certainly should have a share of them.
So it sounds like there's a lot for these countries to figure out. What's your prediction of the sort of timescales of how quickly we'll be extracting?
Yeah, I thought I had this worked out. I have a map which I showed during the lecture, which suggested that the offshore part of the East Siberia Sea and the Laptev Sea was 20 years away. You know, we just didn't have the technology. We probably didn't need the oil and gas that's there. And yet I read in the Oil and Gas Journal the last year that vast tracts of it have been licensed to Rosneft and ExxonMobil. So it's happening faster than even I thought.
And faster than the technology is catching up? Or is
until I see somebody's got a solution for producing oil and gas from the offshore East Siberian Sea, where the ice really does move and is present for 6 months of the year. I would like to see that in place and the mitigation against spills, particularly oil spills, in place before that goes ahead.
And this is not a new place that has baffled explorers with its difficult conditions. It sounds like people have been trying to get into that area for hundreds of years, and it's almost the same problem with the ice and the inaccessibility.
Oh, explorers have been all over the Arctic. It's fascinated explorers, whether it be just to find a geographical pole to cross Greenland's ice cap, or to find oil and gas resources and other resources. But the geology is not the problem here. we know enough to say, yeah, this is probably going to have oil and gas. The problems are going to be the politics. The problems are going to be the technology. And lastly, the environmental impact and the indigenous peoples.
And leaving aside the obvious environmental impact of burning all those fossil fuels, which is a larger problem, what would you say to environmentalists who were just horrified by the idea of ruining this beautiful landscape?
You know, I was asked this question when I was over in Canada, and I think, you know, I'd answered it differently 5 years ago when I was still in the oil industry, but I honestly do think that the environmentalists provide an important barrier to the worst excesses of the oil and gas industry, who, if given a free rein, will not always be at their best behaviour. And I think what the environmentalists do, although occasionally they go too far, is they make sure they keep the oil and gas industry honest. There's nothing wrong with that. And as long as that balance is there, it's fine. I suspect that the recent activities in offshore Russia and Greenpeace finding themselves in jail is redressing the balance probably in the wrong direction, is pushing the balance in the wrong direction. And that's why I worry a little bit about Russia offshore.
And presumably there's no getting away from, it sounds like this is something which will happen. Hopefully there are ways that will not antagonise various
countries. Yeah, other than throwing all the oil wells open in the Middle East to everyone, the Arctic will be a place where the international oil companies will see opportunities to replace production. And it's very important when you're producing 4 million barrels of oil equivalent a day, as the majors are, to be able to replace that production, because the reserves to production ratio is one of the measures that the analysts use to put a share price.
And is there any interest, sort of more generally, for a scientist, exploration happening up there, beyond the oil and gas resources there? Is it an interesting place to visit as a geologist, and is this an opportunity to do some interesting geological research?
The Arctic's fascinating. I mean, when I walked up there in 1979, just the fact of being in a pristine white wilderness, and it was white at that time, there was no sign of any tundra, it was just covered in snow and ice. It was fascinating. So I didn't see much geology. From a geological point of view, understanding the evolution of the Arctic is going to be pretty important from a scientific point of view. A lot of money has been spent in Canada at the moment. They're trying to understand the evolution of the Arctic Ocean. It's driven politically, but it's still money that's going into the universities. And what they're trying to do is to show that Canada perhaps owns as much of the Arctic Ocean as the Russians do. And that's about establishing where the continental shelf extends beyond the 200-kilometre territorial limit.
And in terms of the way that landscape is changing with changing climates as well, there's a sort of associated, there's almost a link there with, the cynical headline would be that now that climate change is warming the planet and the ice is melting, it's easier for oil companies to go in there.
Yeah, it's a paradox, isn't it? There we are. The oil companies have produced a product that has put the carbon into the atmosphere, that's warmed the planet, that has melted the ice, that is going to allow the oil and gas companies to go and explore the Arctic. I can see the headline now.
It's inevitable.
It is. It's inevitable, and it will happen. It's not only done that; it's presenting the Russians with a wonderful alternative sea route from the Far East into Europe that takes all of the Suez Canal and that area out of play.
So it's all a bit doom and gloomy. Are there positive sides to this?
The positives to it. I mean, listen, the oil industry can explore and produce for oil and gas environmentally sensitively and safely. It can do. The resource is needed by the planet. There's quite a lot of us on this planet, and there's quite a lot of us on this planet who would love to own a car, who haven't got one at the moment. There is no foreseeable, in the foreseeable future, chance of us not growing the energy requirement on the planet. So the great thing about the Arctic is it potentially buys us 30 years of energy into the mix. Give us a chance to find the next solution, the next energy source. And that's what we can hope for from the Arctic.
Well, it seems like it's one of those geological topics that's impossible to separate from politics, as so many are, but it's...
I can't think... Oh, well, certainly oil and gas has never been separated from politics over its 100 years plus history of extraction.
Well, it's been fascinating hearing you talk about it. Thanks so much for talking
to me. Thanks, it's good to talk to you about it.
And the lecture will be filmed and available on our website to view or on our YouTube channel. And if you want to ask any further questions from Al Fraser or any of our London lecturers, use the GSL lecture hashtag on Twitter. Thanks for listening.